In the case of these childish people, they are not reliable. They change every moment. One moment they will be your friends, another moment they will be your enemies. And even if you ask them to undertake a virtuous practice, they get angry. So therefore it is extremely difficult to please these ordinary people. And if you say something beneficial, they get angry. And they will even stop you engaging in virtuous deeds. And therefore they will never listen to you, and they get angry. And that will project them into negative state of existence. And also additionally, these childish people, they have jealousy to the hires, competitiveness to the equal, and arrogance to those that are low, and they get puffed up and praised. And if you say something unpleasant, they get angry. So how could we get any benefit from this childish people? And therefore, if you, as is said in verse 13, if you therefore associate with these childish people, and then what you will end up doing is the same thing as these childish people do, that is praising oneself, defaming others, and delighting in talking about worldly things, and therefore all these non-virtuous deeds will definitely arise. And in this way, when you mutually rely on each other, then that will become a cause for destruction. So therefore they will not be able to do any benefit to you, and you will also not be able to fulfill their purposes. So therefore you should stay away from these childish people. However, even if you stay away from these childish people, occasionally you will definitely meet these people. So at that occasion, try to please them and help them, but at the same time, do not become too close with them, and you should relate to them in an ordinary way. And as the verse 16 reads, that just as the bees alight on the flower and extract the essence of the flower, therefore simply try to extract the meaning that is useful for religious practices, and then after that act as you've never seen them before, and without associating too closely with them, lead your life. Verse 17. And when you develop the pride by thinking that I have many wealth, and I have many people who admire me and respect me, and there are many people who likes me, and when you develop such kind of arrogance, and then after you die, you will experience many fears. The more none of these praises and so on are of any use after you die. And however, you will encounter the sufferings of such negative deeds, and therefore you will encounter many fear. Verse 18. It is because of these reasons to whatever object this confused mind develops craving and attachment. This mind is called a confused mind because you are satisfied with some of the temporary satisfactions that you get by enjoying this. And because of your confused mind getting attached to those objects, later on you will experience some sufferings which is 1,000 times more than what you have enjoyed. And therefore, the wise ones should not develop attachment towards such objects, because by developing attachment to such objects, fears arise. Because you fall into the negative state of existence and experience great fear. So if you are really a skilled person, you should not develop attachment to such objects. Because these enjoyments in relation to name, fame and so on, even if you do not give this away right now, at the time when you die, you leave them behind. So you should develop a stable mind which is without attachment and craving. Verse 20 reads that even if you get a lot of wealth, like things so on, and you get a lot of fame, but at the time you go, you cannot go with all this wealth and name and fame, and at that time when you die, no one knows where you go or where you have gone with, without this wealth, without this name and fame. Verse 21, when someone praises you, do not get too happy, because there are others who are talking bad things about you. Now, if someone says bad things towards you, do not feel too discouraged and unhappy, because there are others who are praising you. Verse 22, it is difficult to fulfill the wishes of all the sentient beings who have so many varied mental dispositions, and therefore how could I, with such a weak person, can fulfill the wishes of everybody? So therefore, give up trying to please everybody. Therefore, there's no need for you to behave in a way as if you're trying to please everybody. Even the Buddha failed to please everybody because of their varied dispositions. So how could I fulfill their purposes? So therefore, they do not try to flatter to others and do not develop attachment and craving and give up all these worldly thoughts. Verse 23, and then also in the case of sentient beings, when they do not have the wealth, then people make fun of them, saying that he has really nothing, he is very poor, and say all unpleasant things. And when they have wealth, then again they say bad things, saying that he earned all this money because of wrong ways of life and so on. So certain beings are extremely difficult to associate, and therefore there's no way you can really please them. Verse 24, and in the case of these childish people, they never get pleased unless they are able to fulfill their own selfish individual purposes, and therefore none of these sentient beings are not proper to see them as spiritual friends, as is taught by the Buddha. Verse 25, therefore without developing attachment to your parents, relatives, name, fame, wealth and so on, you should go into the forest in a place of isolation. And what are the benefits and qualities of such a place of isolation? When you are in the forest, these wild animals, birds and trees, they will never say anything unpleasant to you. And it's really very easy to associate with them. So you should always aspire, when will the time come when I will be able to live together with them in a forest? And verse 26 reads that also in terms of the place, how nice if I'm without attachment and stay in a cave and in a forest, empty temple, or at the foot of the forest, without looking back with attachment. And it's important, because if you need a house, then in the house you need a bed to sleep, you need a table to put something, and when you have a table, then on the table you need some carve and something, and when you are carve, then you don't, if the carve, ordinary carve is enough, you need a good quality carve, probably made from silver, or the best is golden carve with all the ornaments. So in this way, it's an endless pursuit. And therefore, it is in this case, the Chinese master, Thoyong Lama, said to him, made this remark to the Tibetan Lama, saying that the Tibetan Lamas are fond of making everything from gold, except the urine pot. And then he also made the remark that the Tibetan Lamas of these days, they have very short qualities, but very long aims. And in the past, the lamas have very short names, but long qualities, lot of qualities. So this is a very kind of hitting the target kind of remark. And so here the text saying, how nice if I'm able to stay in old cave, empty temples, and at the foot of the tree. And in fact, a few years back, we had one Tibetan elderly monk from the Ganden Changse Monastery. He was practicing one of these 12 trainings that must be practiced. And so he promised that he will abide, remain at the foot of the tree or in a house without roof. So he practiced that. And at one time, he told me that he was meditating at the foot of a tree, and suddenly he saw a snake close by. He got very scared, but fortunately the snake did not attack him, and it went in a different direction. So therefore, what I'm saying is, if we have a particular place like a house, then right from the beginning, you may not have any idea to lead a very elaborate life, but gradually you will keep on piling so many things. And when I left Lhasa and came into exile, I had only two small boxes, and life was really very convenient, and I was quite happy. But now during the last 40 years, because of having a fixed location, then there are so many things there, and you gradually keep a cupboard, and then later on you paint the cupboard nicely, and then gradually you get something to put in the cupboard, and the more and more articles you have to put in the cupboard, then you need also a lock to ensure that nobody touches them or steals them. So this is how we end up elaborating our life meaninglessly in such a meaningless pursuit. And so in this context, if we think about great practitioners like Milarepa, how good a practitioner he was. And therefore I always try to remind myself, with this prayer, may I be able to visit and live in indefinite places like a wounded animal and undertake my practices. And this is, I think, explained in verse 27, which says, when you are able to live in a place which is owned by nobody, and which is completely open, and where you can move freely, how nice if I'm able to lead in such a place. So there you can stretch your legs, and pick lices if you have a lot of lices. So you can enjoy in whatever way you would like to live. Verse 28. How nice if I'm able to stay without fear, where I'm satisfied with some odd things like my begging bowl and putting on clothes which people do not want and do not like, and and in a place where even if I do not hide myself, there will be no threat of robbers and thieves. And verse 29 is, and you should visit us and find out what's the difference between your present body and the pile of bones that you see in a cemetery. And this we should realize how we are subject to destruction, and pray that when the time will come when I'm able to see myself as not so different from that piles of bones. And that's why in some of the Buddhist practices, when they put on the ornaments of a skeleton, that's also for the purpose of reminding impermanence. And you also pray that in the case of my body, a time will come when I am dead, and because of the smells of my body, even the foxes will not approach towards my body. So such a time will definitely come. And verse 31 says, and even those bones and fleshes that were there with you when you were born, all this will depart. And if this is the case, what is the need to talk about being separated from your friends and relatives? At the time when you are born alone. Verse 32 reads, when you are born alone. When you will die, you will die alone. So at these two critical periods, nobody was really of any help. So in between, why you develop so much attachment? Since nobody is going to share your sufferings, why you need so many of these obstructive friends? And that's why I very often tease those people who make a calculation and find out which day is good for them to travel and so on. So I tease them, saying that what is the use of doing this? Because at the time of death, there's no use of making any astrological calculations. So at the time when you are born and at the time when you die, there's no need, no use to consult the astrological calculation. And if you're someone who has total your life, then there's no need to do such astrological calculation. And if you have no control over your life, then even if you do the astrological calculation, it will be of no use. So it is really of no use to consult astrological calculations to find out. And in the worst case, you can make an astrological calculation about the time of your death. And if you're dying, then probably you should strangle yourself to make sure that the astrological calculation was correct. And in fact, once I visited the medical center, I made this remark saying that I personally don't have much trust in these astrological calculations. Then later on I learned that the students and the staffs of that medical college, particularly those who were in the astrological department, they got very discouraged. And then later I have to again console them by saying that was my personal viewpoint and stand, but I'm not saying that this is of no use to the society as a whole. So if you really look at the span of life, the longest we live will be 100 years. And during this short period, why should we become a nuisance? Why should we create unhappiness up there, unhappiness down there, creating enemies here, hostility there? We are all experiencing the same problem, same difficulty. So therefore, we should live together, help each other, assist each other, show love and compassion to each other. This should be our life. So realizing that finally we will all die, what is important is that we spend our life in a meaningful way. Verse 33 reads, just as when a person is traveling, that person will keep on changing the places, give up one place and then move on to take a new place. Similarly, when we are on this path within the samsara, we keep on changing different places of birth. Verse 34. So therefore, before your body is lifted by four people, surrounded by worldly beings with great sadness, before that time of death comes, you must retire into the forest. Verse 35. So therefore, do away with these objects of relatives and friends or enemies who are object of attachment, hatred and so on, and let this body stay in a place of isolation so that people count you as if you are already dead, so that nobody will lament or suffer after you. So, as the verse 36 says, that so that you will have nobody near you who will be harmed with pains and sufferings, and if you lead such a life, then your mind will never be distracted from meditating on remembering the qualities of the Buddha and so on. And therefore, as is said in verse 37, you should stay alone in a forest, in a place of isolation where there is no distraction at all, where in that place of forest you can live with full of radiance on the face, and where you can get things without much hardship, and where you will have full of peace and happiness. Verse 38. So therefore give up all other minds, like wishing to harm others, and by meditating only on the bodhicitta, and in order to let your mind stay in equipoise on the mind of bodhicitta, or in order to develop shamat, and by developing special insight and to develop to discipline the mind, you should make effort. So this is how to remove destruction in the sense of external material destructions, and then it explains about how to remove internal destructions with regard to removing hatred as an obstructive factor. This has been discussed in the chapter on patience. And with regard to removing ignorance, which is an obstruction, this will be explained in chapter 9, the chapter on wisdom. So in this chapter, the process of removal of attachment will be explained. And many of the problems that we see today in the world, particularly the disagreement and conflicts among neighbors, and also many of other conflicts that we see in the world are due to desire and attachment. And this is explained in verse 39. And even in this world, in the life hereafter, desire and attachment is source of many disturbances and sufferings. And in this life, you experience the sufferings of killing each other, putting under bondage, and so on. And in the future lives, you will experience being born in a hell. So there are many objects of development of attachment and desire. Here we will primarily talk about development of attachment towards women. And this is explained because, as I said, the teaching is primarily given to the ordained monks, and therefore the faults of women is highlighted here. And if you are a woman practitioner who is undertaking the practice of Bodhicharyavatara, then you should reflect on the shortcomings and faults of men. So except there are some minor differences like the differences of sex organs, apart from that, basically we all have the same faults and shortcomings. So from the point view of a monk practitioner, one should reflect on this, on these faults and shortcomings of a woman. So this is explained from verse 40 onwards. Now, for example, if you are inviting someone as your if you invite someone as your bride, so first of all you involve many male and female messengers or go-betweens and make repeated requests and supplications in order to achieve that woman as your bride. And so in the pursuit of getting that woman, you end up doing many negative deeds and end up doing many things which is of bad, which will bring bad repute, and you do not worry about all those sins and ill reputations. And you would even face certain dangers. You will fight with others, and in terms of your wealth also you spend a lot of money, and you will lose all your wealth. And the purpose of all this is to be able to embrace that woman, whether you whether it's a man or woman. If it is a man, then embracing the woman, then in the case of women, it's embracing the woman, then you derive some kind of pleasure from that embracement, and it is for that purpose of being able to embrace that you face so many dangers and you waste all your health. So that person with whom you embraces at a superficial glance looks handsome or beautiful, but if you really explore the reality of that person and think about the skin and think about what is there between under the skin and what is there under the flesh, the blood, the bones and so on, and in fact sometimes we see a doctor undertaking a heart surgery, and you must have seen all those, so you will find that it's only a skeleton and nothing else, and it is nothing that has independent existence or autonomous existence. It is only impermanent, changing, and in the nature of being controlled by others. However, because of your strong desire and strong craving, you embrace such a person. So why is it that you develop such an attachment to such an object, and why do not you move towards liberation and nirvana? And verse 43 says, whether it's a, and in the beginning when you invite the bride, even with effort, when you try to lift the veil and try to look at the face, the woman will bashfully look down, and so this kind of woman, at the time when she dies, at that time the dead body, whether you have seen that woman's face or not, but at the time of the death, the bodies on her, the clothes on her body will be removed at the cemetery, and you at that time will be able to see the whole body, and at that time instead of developing attachment you get frightened. Why is it so? Verse 45, and before, whether it's man or woman, when there is attachment towards each other, even if somebody gazes or somebody looks at that girl or at that boy or man or woman, you try to protect it. But at the time when they die, their whole body is eaten by vultures and so on, then why do you, miser, do not protect that body at that time? Verse 46 reads, if you are saying that I'm developing such attachment to the flesh of that person, then you should remember, a time will come when in the cemetery the flesh of this beautiful woman or handsome man that will be devoured by the vultures and so on. So since finally the flesh of that man and woman will be devoured by vultures and so on, so it is their food, and this being the case, why you make so much offerings to this body, offering food, flowers, sandal fragrance, ornaments, and so on. Verse 47 reads that after the man and woman is dead, merely by seeing that he walks skeletons, even though that skeleton is not moving, but still by seeing that skeleton you get very frightened. If this is the case, then why you are not frightened by the living person who is really like a walking corpse who moves all around? And even when the body is covered, if you develop attachment, then why do you not develop attachment when the body is not covered? And if you say that the body that is thrown in the cemetery is of no use, no purpose, and then why you embrace the one which is covered with the body? Verse 49. And the excrement and the saliva, both of these are product of the same food. And this being the case, why you dislike the excrement and like the saliva and suck it? Verse 50. And why is it that you do not like touching the soft cotton as a pillow? And so fond of the putrid odor of the body, it is because of your ignorance. And in the case, verse 51 reads, in the case of some people who have lot of attachment desire and who are totally confused, they get angry with the they even get angry with the soft cotton, thinking that one cannot sleep with that cotton filled pillow. Now, if you say that I am not developing attachment to the impure body, then in that case, why you embrace the man or the woman whose body is made up of muscles joining the bones and plastered by the flesh? Verse 53 reads that even though in your own case your own body is full of impure substances and you enjoy your body all the time, but still you develop attachment to that impure sack of other bodies because of attachment. Verse 54 says, if you say that I am fond of the flesh of the other person, and therefore I would like to touch and see that flesh, then why would you not like those fleshes which are without mind? And if you are after the mind, then the mind, which is object of your attachment, will be touched and cannot be seen. And that which you can touch and see is not the mind. So why you embrace the body of others? Therefore, it is not amazing. It is not strange that you are unable to see the nature of impure nature of other body. But what is really strange is you are unable to see the impurities of your own body. Verse 57 reads that by abandoning the fresh lotus flower that blossoms with the rays of the sunlight, why do you joy the impure body? Verse 58 reads, even when a place is smeared by impure excrements and so on, you would not like touching that place. If this is the case, then why you would like to touch that body, which in fact is the source of all those impure materials? Verse 59 reads, and if you have no attachment to the impure body, then why you develop attachment towards that body, which is produced from the field, from the impure field, which is the womb of the mother, and which is developed by impure seeds, like the blood from of the father and the mother? Why you embrace such a body? So from that point of view, the very body of a human being really looks like a machine whose whole responsibility is to produce all those impure substances. So unless you are able to make a good use of the mind in terms of the body, in terms of its cause, in terms of its nature, it's really impure. Verse 60. And since you do not like even a smallest kind of impure objects, like a maggot that comes from the impure body, why you with excessive attachment? Why you develop attachment to such impure body? And in your case, you do not only not defame your impure body, but you even embrace the impure back of the body of other people. Verse 62 reads that even attractive looking objects like a camphor, which is used in medicine, and similarly cooked rice and vegetables, even these attractive things, once you put it in your mouth and take it out and throw it on the ground, then even that ground becomes dirty and impure. Verse 63. And even though such impure body is really evident to you, but still if you have some doubt, then you should go and study some of the impure bodies that is thrown in the cemetery. Verse 64 reads, for example, if you open the skin, you will get frightened. And even after such knowledge, how you can get such joy? Verse 65 says that the fragrant smell that is anointed on the body is the smell of the sandal and so on, not of the body. And these days people are fond of using so many types of cosmetics, colors on the lips, and colors on the eyes. So these are not the fragrant smells that you get from them are not the fragrance of the body. So why you get attachment to a body because of attachment to some other fragrance? So it's really like a pot that is filled with excrements and then it's covered by some silky garments which externally looks good and beautiful, but there is no essence in that. So in terms of our body, it is full of bad smell, and isn't it that good that we do not develop attachment to it? However, the worldly beings senselessly develop attachment to it, and therefore why do you anoint good fragrance to it? And then verse 68 says that you might say that I develop attachment towards the long nails and flowing hairs, flowing pure clean hairs of the women, men, and so on. And these days people try to give different shapes of snails, shapes of snakes, and also different styles of hair, but they are also not object of attachment. Because ultimately the nature of body can be understood if you reveal the, if you see the naked body. So they should be seen like weapons, harmful weapons. And therefore, why should we take too much care of it? But however, because of my ignorance, I made so much effort, and it is because of such attachment that this entire world is today disturbed with madness. Verse 17. By merely seeing the heaps of bones, you develop a sense of discouragement. So therefore, why should you delight this cemetery of cities which is filled with moving skeletons? Verse 71. And even this impure body, man or woman, doesn't come value free, doesn't come without any cost. In order to obtain that, you have to work very hard, and in the future lives you will suffer from the harms of being born in the hell. Verse 72 reads that when you are a child, then you don't have the capacity to make wealth, and when you become adult, then you get the difficulty of not finding the wealth, and you have to work very hard. And so in the process of accumulating the wealth, your life comes to an end. When you are old and grown up, at that time, even if you have some wealth, then you have no capacity to enjoy with a man or a woman. Verse 73 reads, and in the case of some people who have so much attachment, but still they are, because of their situation, they can't enjoy desire. And throughout the day, they work very hard. And in the end of the day, they are so exhausted that after returning home, they just sleep and will not be able to enjoy with the man or the woman, and they will sleep like a dead body. Verse 74 says that even after marriage, either the man and the woman sometimes have to do a lot of traveling and stay quite far away from each other, and again experiencing suffering. And even though they very much like a man or woman, but throughout the year they are unable to see it because of their work or business. And because of ignorance, you are really selling your body for man or woman. and without achieving it, you will pass away through the force of karmic actions, and some sell their body, and some become a slave. And in some cases, even if your wife produces a child, you are so poor, or your family is so poor, that you have to live under a tree and so forth. So those are they're deceived by the desire. They even have to sacrifice their life. And what is really evident even these days is that in the beginning you had the problem of not being able to find a suitable partner, and when you find a suitable partner, you have the difficulty of not having enough money and not getting a child, and so in the beginning you have the difficulty of not getting a child, and later on you have the difficulty of having so many children, and then you have the difficulty of not being able to find a proper school to send, and not being able to look after them, and when you are able to finally send the children to the school, you worry about how they will do in their examination, and when they are able to finish their study properly, you worry about what kind of job they will get. When you get a job, you worry about what will be the income. Oh my God, this is an endless job. And when the child creates some problem, that creates again lot of problem for the parents. And if the parents, then the parents also get worried, thinking that if we die, how would the children will fare? And if there is a divorce, then there is a problem of how to find a new wife or husband. And if they get a new husband or new wife, then they have the problem of getting creating problem from his ex-wife or ex-husband. And then in the worst case, there is the problem of each other fighting and killing. And even in the case when the man and the woman lives a nice life and grows a very mature age, then they reach such a ripe and mature age that they worry who will die first. And from that point of view, if you really lead an ordinary life, then you don't have to worry any of these things. No need to worry about your death or whatever. And if you are able to think properly, there is such benefit. If you are unable to realize and think about this, then it's your personal loss. And that's why some of the masters in the past used to say that life of an ordinary person is really like a single burning stick of incense. If it stands up, it produces a good fragrance. If it falls down, that's end. Nothing to worry. And that's why I tell very often tell people that when I reflect on the details of the problems of the household life, it is really a very encouraging sight for the ordained practitioners. So therefore, so in this way, you should reflect on the faults of attachment in general, and particularly the attachment to sexual experience. And then with regard to the wealth, first you have the difficulty of not being able to accumulate the wealth, then the problem of not being able to guard it, and then the problem of getting the wealth lost. Even in the case of an ordinary monk, when we have the difficulty of few sets of robes, and then particularly when you live in a hot country like India, even if you have some grains, then you have to protect them from and make sure that they are not destroyed by the insects. And particularly when Tibetans flew from Tibet, when they came with wearing sheepskins, So as soon as they arrived in India, in the beginning the sheepskin was really good. It was comfortable and keeps the person warm and cozy. But once you are in a hot place, then it produces bad smell and it's of no use, it's too hot. So these are the problems that you get when you have so many of this wealth. And particularly in a hot place like India, there are so many flies around which contaminates your food and drinks. So there was one meditator who told me that he meditated for a long time in the mountains, and for a long time he said he never got ill because the atmosphere was so pure. But as soon as he come to a bigger city or town, then immediately he gets sick or his mind becomes unhappy. So if you really have nothing to eat, you have problem. If you have something to eat, then make sure that the food is not too oily, and you get sick because it is too oily. Even in the case of medicine, if you take a medicine which is good for the upper part of the body, it will harm the lower part of the body. And if you take a medicine which is good for the lower part of the body, it will harm the upper part of the body. So all this clearly shows that all these are really temporary remedies and not long-term solutions. And the long-term happiness is only when you are able to completely get rid of all these disturbing, afflictive emotions. And the root cause of our bondage is the grasping at oneself, grasping of the self. And that is why in the Tibetan tradition we have the tradition of painting this Bhava Chakra, the wheel of life, where we create image of the messenger of death with bearing fangs and holding the whole cycle of existence within his paws. So it is really this frightening or frightful self-grasping which is the source of our bondage, and until and unless we are able to get liberated from it, our suffering will be endless. But this does not mean that we don't need any wealth. Even in the case of an ordinary person, you need food, you need some money, and that's why Tibetans stamped money. Tibetans coined the Tibetans gave a very good name for the money, saying that the wishful thing, they gave a name which is called Kungathundu. So Kungathundu is the name for the money. So Kungathundu means one which pleases everybody and which brings success. So you need money. But however, if you run too much after money, then you end up doing all negative things like stealing, robbing and so forth. And even in China, today we hear so much about corruption because of attachment to wealth. So when you are, when you have so much attachment, then you do not worry about defiling the name of the country, name of the people of that country. So you enter into corruption because of attachment to money. And then in a, on a minor scale, even the prostitution is because of attachment towards name. And it is because of leading such a way of life. Today we experience horrible diseases like AIDS. And so therefore, if you invent so many things and do so many things, the result will be also so many destructive things. So those people who are distracted by attachment towards wealth, they can never be liberated from suffering. So therefore, those with desire have so many problems. So in this way, if you reflect on the sufferings within the hell and so on, then the destructive results of desire and attachment cannot be compared to the destructions that you suffer through weapon, poison, fire, or being fallen from a cliff. And therefore, as much as possible, try to follow a path shown by the Buddha and his followers, and try to practice as much as possible and try to leave some imprint. And in this way you should get discouraged towards sensual objects and develop joy towards a place of isolation. And again here the text explains about the advantages of remaining in a place of isolation, because if you remain in a place of isolation like in the forest, then it is without unnecessary argument, and therefore it is without afflictive emotions which are results of argument. And therefore if you stay in such a forest which is peaceful and which is illuminated by the light of the moon, and when you remain under such slate houses without noise, and there if you meditate, think about the benefiting other sentient beings, there will be great peace. So therefore to be able to stay in such empty houses or in the cave as much as possible, and through that way removing all the sufferings, and to be able to remain relaxed and carefree with full of independence and without relation to anybody, and with full of contentment, and such a state of peace will not be found even by the king of the god. So in this way you should remember the qualities of all this, and then without discursive thought meditate on bodhicitta, and this can be done by reflecting on the preciousness of human life, impermanence and death, the faults of samsara and so on. And so through such preliminary practices you should gradually undertake the actual meditation on bodhicitta. So there is no meditation which is better than meditation on bodhicitta, and that is why the great Indian master Atisha has said that meditation on bodhicitta is really the best, like the moon and the sun, and even if it takes eons, meditate on that. And so right from the beginning, make effort to meditate on the equality of oneself and others. Equality of oneself and others, as I had highlighted earlier, means that oneself and others are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, and therefore develop this wish to benefit everybody, benefit all sentient beings who are as endless as the extent of the space, and therefore your wish to benefit everybody should be equal, without feeling of closeness to some and distantness to others. And since all sentient beings are same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, having the right to have happiness and having the right to remove suffering, therefore you should guard and protect everybody as you would guard yourself. And all these sentient beings are also same, because they all have the potential to actualize the Buddhahood. In my own case, just as in my own case I have the potential to actualize Buddhahood, similarly all sentient beings have the capacity to actualize Buddhahood. Now when you reflect in this way, you will find that in your own case, even though you may not be so kind to yourself, but you have so much feeling of closeness to yourself, and you thereby you always protect yourself and you always try to preserve yourself. And therefore, if you ask why I have this wish to protect myself and help myself, you have this wish because by nature you want happiness and do not want suffering. That's the main reason. So this being the case, you should guard and protect other sentient beings also, because they are also like yourself, wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. But however, if you compare yourself with the rest of the sentient beings, the difference is that in the case of the rest of the sentient beings, they are countless, and therefore the happiness and the suffering that they experience is of paramount importance. Whereas in your case, you may be very important, but you are just one individual, single individual. Now, for example, in our own body, there are so many aspects of the body in the form of your hand, legs, and so on. But because all these are part of your body, you need to protect them. In fact, when you talk about protecting your body, then it is protecting the entire aspects of your body, like protecting your thumbs, fingers, and so on. Similarly, since all sentient beings who are different from you, even though their happiness is their experiences, the kind of happiness that they experience, the kind of sufferings that they experience, there may be slight variations. For example, some may be experiencing more suffering of suffering, some may be experiencing more suffering of change, and so on. So, however, you should regard and see all of these sentient beings like yourself and guard them and protect them. Now, here again, you might ask a question by saying, these sentient beings to whom you have developed great feeling of closeness, the sufferings, when these sentient beings encounter suffering, even though they are encountering and experiencing suffering, doesn't harm you. Just as in the case of your relatives and friends, when they encounter suffering, even though they are experiencing suffering, doesn't directly make you suffer, but still, because of your feeling of closeness, you protect them and you help them. So similarly, you should be able to develop such feeling of closeness to everybody, and when they experience suffering, you will be able to develop a feeling of uneasiness and feeling of being unable to bear their suffering. I must eliminate and dispel the sufferings of other beings because it is suffering, just as the suffering in my case. And I will do those that is beneficial to those that are beneficial to others, because they also possess the mind. So therefore, they are similar to my own body. Since oneself and others both are same in wanting happiness, what is the difference between others and myself, that I make effort towards my own peace and happiness and not about others? And in the case of experiencing of happiness, both oneself and others aspire that. And since oneself and others are similar in not wanting suffering, why is it that you make an effort to remove your suffering and protect yourself, and why do not you make an effort to remove the sufferings of other sentient beings? Now you might say that the other suffering does not harm me directly, therefore I need not guard it. And if this is only the reason, then in that case you should not worry about the sufferings that you are going to experience in the future, because the sufferings that you are going to experience in the future is not going to harm you directly right now. So that kind of conception is a wrong conception. And likewise, when things appear, when things are perceived by the conceptual thought, then the conception tends to mix the time and the place, and therefore we develop the feeling that the I of yesterday is the same as today. and the eye of today is same as tomorrow, and that's why we make sure that I do not suffer in the future, particularly at the time of the death and so on. So you might answer this by saying that even though the time is different, but in my case the experience of the person is the same. So this kind of conception is wrong, because the person at the time of the death and the person at the present time is different, and this physical body which you have right now when you are young is different from the body that you have at the time when you are old and when you die. And if you are saying that the sufferings of each and every individual should be removed by that individual person who experiences that suffering, then in that case your hand should not go to remove the sufferings of your feet, and because the suffering of the feet is experienced by the feet and not by the hand. So therefore, why you should help and guard it. And here you might say that even though it is improper, but because of grasping of the self, I am engaging in such a way of life, then in that case this misconception must be removed and eliminated. And therefore, that improper conception of making a big demarcation between oneself and others must be eliminated as much as possible. The sameness of the continuity, like the past and future lives, and the sameness of the collection, like the hands and the legs. So what is designated on this is false. Just like the designation that we give on a rosary, or the label that we give as in terms of armies and so on. Because these are all designated, they are all dependent on their parts, and there is no continuity or collection which has inherent existence. Just in the case of rosary, it is designated on collection of beads, and similarly they are all designated and doesn't have inherent existence. So therefore, in the absence of the person who is the experience of suffering, all the particularities will also not be there. Or in other words, this lack of inherent existence of the self is true in the case of everybody, oneself and others. And one might even argue by suggest even though there is no independently existing self, but because of the fact that what one experiences is suffering, therefore that must be eliminated. Similar should be the case in removing the sufferings of other sentient beings. And therefore, sufferings of all sentient beings should be eliminated. And therefore, you cannot argue with this. And if you are removing your sufferings, then likewise you should remove the sufferings of other sentient beings. Otherwise, just as you have ignored the sufferings of other sentient beings, you should also ignore the sufferings of other sentient beings. And again, this will be argued by saying that if you develop compassion, then your mind is filled with many sufferings, and therefore why should I persistently develop such compassion?
Ninji
This is answered by saying that if you reflect on the sufferings of other sentient beings, how could such a compassionate mind experience many sufferings? Meaning that when you show concern about the sufferings of other sentient beings and reflect on it, you get some sense of unhappiness in the mind, and your mind gets a little bit disturbed on the surface level, on the superficial level. So even though you get that kind of temporary uneasiness and happiness, but in the long run, through showing such genuine concern and developing such compassion, that will ensure long-lasting peace and happiness for oneself. And it is through that way you can also be able to benefit and help others, and thus it will produce very good fruits. And therefore you can't say that development of compassion is source of experiencing of many sufferings. And in the case of sufferings of sentient beings, it is endless. Whereas when we experience some kind of happiness, unhappiness, when we develop compassion, it has many benefits and purposes. And particularly when you meditate on compassion for a long time, and that will strengthen your mind, that will increase the scope of your mind, that will help you not get discouraged, and that will instill confidence from the depth of your heart. Whereas normally when we encounter suffering, then we don't have forbearance and tolerance, and therefore we lose confidence and we get discouraged. Whereas when we meditate on compassion, we do so not out of the force of afflict emotions and actions, but we meditate on compassion intentionally, and therefore that meditation on compassion instills self-confidence, and you have this desire to help others, protect others, and such a compassion is assisted by wisdom. Therefore the mind is open, and it's able to perceive the sufferings clearly, and it's able to see the causes of sufferings, and it is also able to see the possibilities of ignorance, which is the main cause of sufferings. And therefore your mind will not be weighed down, or your mind will not be overpowered by discouragement or afflict emotions. Whereas in the case of ordinary experiencing of suffering, like for example when you encounter certain physical sickness, then you get completely overpowered and you remain helpless. So therefore there is a big difference between the kind of uneasiness that you experience when you develop compassion and the natural sufferings that you experience. So these two are different, because one comes naturally without choice, another is cultivated intentionally. Not only that, even if you feel experience some kind of suffering and uneasiness, but through experiencing one type of suffering, if you are able to eliminate many sufferings, and then someone who has that compassion must experience such a suffering. And one must therefore develop such kind of experience of suffering in the form of development of compassion within oneself and within the mind of everybody. And it is because of this the Bodhisattva by the name Metok Danzi, even though he saw the harms from the king, and even though he knew that he will be killed by the king, but he did not take steps to remove his own suffering, knowing that he will be able to put an end to suffering of many sentient beings.
Never to saw you now.
So in this way, when your mind is strongly habituated with such a practice, and you will then enjoy removing the sufferings of other sentient beings, and because of your because of your mind being habituated with such practice of compassion, a time will come when, in terms of removing the sufferings of other sentient beings, you will gladly go into that job like a swan entering into the ocean. And therefore, one should see the job of fulfilling the purpose of other sentient beings as the most important job. And if you are able to liberate sentient beings, and then you get such an ocean of joy, that itself should be enough. What is the use of achieving liberation just for myself? But when you have such a bodhicitta, then even though you work for the benefit of other sentient beings, and there will be no arrogance, and because even without being asked, you voluntarily help others, assist others, and work for others, and you will not see such a work as something special or something amazing. And when one wholeheartedly works for the benefit of other sentient beings, you have no feeling of arrogance, and you have no expectation for the results, thinking that this will prolong my life or I will become famous and so on. So in this way, with this kind of wish, if you guard yourself even from a minor harm like unpleasant words, similarly, just as in your case, you guard yourself even from hearing, even from a minor suffering, like the one that comes from hearing a harsh speech. Similarly, you should guard others. And if you get habituated, then you can definitely practice such compassion to others. For example, because of habituation, for example, right now you cherish so much your body, but if you look carefully, the original cause of this body is the blood and semen that came from your father and mother. And to this, because of your habituation, and today you are able to see this as your body, and unless you make special attention, you will not be able to see that originally it was made from the union of blood and sperm from the parents. So therefore, even though in the case of other people, you are not there, but still because of habituation, you will be able to see all the sentient beings as like yourself. You will be able to see them as your friends. So therefore, just as you have so much craving towards your body, you will be able to develop so much feeling of similar feeling of closeness towards the body of others. And therefore, there will be no difficulty to regard your body as the body of others. And self-cherishing attitude is full of faults and shortcomings. And cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings is the source of an ocean of qualities. And therefore, you should give up self-grasping and self-cherishing attitude and meditate on regarding the others as especially important, and see that mind of cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings as the source of all qualities. And again, you might answer this by saying that it is really difficult for me to regard everyone as very dear to my heart. Even though in your body you have so many parts like legs, bodies and so on, but since they all are parts and branches of your body, therefore you regard them as your own body. So similarly, even though there are so many different sentient beings, why can't you regard them as the part of sentient beings? And thereby you should regard them as something very dear and close to your heart. And again, you might say that it's really difficult to develop this mind of exchanging oneself for others. This is answered by saying that this is possible because right from the beginning there is no sense of ownership to your body. But gradually, because of habituation of the mind, you developed this feeling of ownership. Similarly, you can do so with regard to the other sentient beings. And if you are able to do that, then even if you fulfill the purpose of other sentient beings, you will not get puffed up, or you will not see this as doing something especially favorable to others. For example, when you eat food for yourself, you do not expect anything in return. So, likewise, just as you would guard yourself from minor harms like hearing unpleasant words, so similarly you should develop a mind that wishes to guard other sentient beings and meditate on compassion. And it is because of this, since it is necessary to guard even from minor harms and sufferings, therefore the compassionate deity Avalokiteshvara has even blessed his name in order to remove the fears and sufferings among his followers. And even though the next verse says that if you get habituated, you can develop these qualities. Even if it is a difficult practice, do not stop it, because when you get habituated, you can develop it and experience it. And here you should see a difference between the internal construction and external construction. In the case of external material development, if you are unable to do something, then you can seek the help of other beings. So therefore the external material development can be, if you are unable to finish it, then you can request someone else to finish it. Whereas in the case of a spiritual development, one has to develop it, and no one can help you, so therefore it is difficult. But however, the difference is that once you get habituated with it, then you can develop it very easily. For example, there may be someone who you are very afraid or scared of, and even by hearing his name, you used to get very frightened. But gradually a time would come when, with habituation, even if that person is absent, you get very unhappy. So in short, those who want to quickly protect oneself and others, then one must undertake this secret practice of exchanging oneself for others. And this practice of exchanging oneself for others is a practice of a bodhisattva with sharp intelligence, and it's a difficult practice for ordinary people. And so in the case of a bodhisattva whose mind is not so intelligent, so such instructions be kept a little bit secret. So that's why here in the line it says that you should practice this secret sublime practice. So we stop here today.